I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast, where we share the stories of women product leaders, the careers they've built, the challenges they've overcome, and why they love building tech products. This episode was recorded live on September 27th, 2023, during an online in-conversation session with Carmen Palmer, the new Chief Product Officer for Women in Product. I got to talk with Carmen about what she will be focusing on in her new role, her path into product management, and to CPO. We also answered some questions from the audience about job searching in this difficult time and finding a sponsor. On the latter topic, we were briefly joined by Susan Davis Ali, founder of Leadership One, and an expert on the challenges that women face in the workplace. Susan had some great tips on finding a sponsor, so be sure to listen all the way through. I wanted to start by sort of briefly introducing Carmen Palmer, who just recently, about a month ago, joined Women in Product, and she is our Chief Product Officer. So I really want to start with like a big welcome to Carmen. It has been fantastic having her on board. I think we're very, very excited. At least I can say I'm personally very excited about her having joined the organization and think we're going to do a lot of great and interesting things. I know that there are some people out there that are like, Chief Product Officer. What is a Chief Product Officer going to be doing at a nonprofit organization that produces events, hosts community? And, you know, creates programs for the women and non-binary folks in our community. So I think my first question for you, Carmen, is, you know, how do you envision your role going forward? And what things are you going to be focusing on that the community might start to see and be interested in?
Yeah, that's a really big question and a great question. First, before I jump into that, I'm just really happy to be here. I think that I'm 30 days in, just like with any new role where you jump in, it's been a lot of listening and learning and understanding. And just, I am so thrilled to be here. So jumping into the question. So yeah, it is a little bit unusual. And I do get that question a lot of like, what does a CPO do at a nonprofit? And what is your product? Like, what are you going to be doing? And I think that for me, the role is not too different from being a CPO at a for-profit. I'll jump into the things that are definitely different. But when I think about what are our products, you know, I think ultimately our products are our members and our community, but we build enabling types of products or programs and events. So we launch programs and events, maybe it's networking opportunities, and we host our community in order to drive, you know, enablement and empowering women within the product management community. So in the same way that, you know, in past roles where, you know, people ask me those questions as well when I was a matching product manager, a matching technology product manager. Well, what's your product? Well, my product is working on the algorithm to make sure that the ads that we show, sponsored listings, are the best ad at the best time for that user. Right. But I'm working on an algorithm. So like, what is that product? So a lot of that thinking in terms of like, what is it? Yeah, it's a different medium, but all of the approaches and the things that you do as a chief product officer really resonate. And I think that that speaks to building the strategy, being really customer focused, like what do our members really want and need to be able to thrive in their roles at all levels? Just like how you need to prioritize what you launch and build, we need to do the same types of things. We have, we internally, we're a very small organization that serves a community of 30,000 plus and growing women, and we get to leverage our community, but we have to look at, you know, our resources. How do we best do our job so that we can scale what we get to do? So a lot of, in terms of like envisioning what the role is, I think that Women in Product is in a really interesting and important time because I think that there's already, and I think you guys agree just from the community, the feedback that we get and what we're doing is that we do have a product market fit. We have this need of a community for women and non-binary people to come in and to share experiences and to feel a belonging while forwarding themselves in their career, getting educated, understanding what the path is when things are unknown. And again, like sharing experiences with other folks in the community. So, I mean, I think that that product market fit, I want to scale that. How can we do a better job where we need to do a better job? How can we offer more and get really intentional about our mission? And how do we do that through our offerings? How do we do that by enabling the community? How do we do that by, like, maybe internally, like, how can we do more with what we have? So a lot of those things are really, really similar and aligned. So let me pause there and see if you have a follow-up on that, but could go on.
You know, I mean, this is a great conversation, and there's probably some things in the background that we can share with people broadly, which is, you know, as a group, as an organization that focuses on women in product management, one of the things that we really thought about was, like, we can take that skill set and apply it to the things that we're doing and find better ways to serve our community. And serving the community has a number of aspects to it. And Carmen, you and I talked about this in the process of getting to know one another and since you've joined the organization. But, you know, how do we serve women in our community? You know, we do that by connecting them to community. We do that by connecting them to opportunities. We do that by helping them develop skills. We do that by helping them understand what it takes to advance and to plan for where they're going. There's all kinds of things along those lines. And I think that bringing Carmen's skill set to bear in terms of thinking about them from that toolkit of product management is going to help us do a way better job of doing that for you guys. So, Carmen, you might want to also talk a little bit about, you know, sort of your perspective on the field overall, like, and how that exists today, how women fit in that field today, how it's changing.
Sure.
A lot
sure. I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, I think we know in general that, you know, in terms of representation, there's still a lot of challenges in representation at mid and senior level roles for women in product. I do see that, you know, slowly changing. Like, I think there are different pockets where, for example, I met someone on the plane last week, and I asked them, he runs a large product organization at a large tech company. And I said, hey, how many women do you have in your leadership positions? And he said, you know, we're about 40%. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. Like, what are you doing? Like, what is it that, you know, enables your teams to have a little bit more representation than the norm, which is really like 30% or even below that? And I think a lot of it is that there is a community within the organization. And we know that, you know, as we get more women and non-binary folks into these roles, it makes it, you know, it makes it more attainable. When you can see it, it's almost like when you can see it, you can do it. Mm-hmm. So in the industry today, first of all, I think that product is really important and critical. And I think that it's definitely growing. I think that there's a traditional sort of tech companies that where we grew up, where product management started and where it evolved and continues to evolve. And I'll come back to that. But I think that there are other industries and organizations that really see the value of like a product-led approach to create like sort of repeatability and sustainability of what they're building. And the ability to be very customer focused, because everyone has to be really efficient with resources. And there's a lot of big bets that companies have to make, right? Because there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of unknowns with AI, a lot of companies that are working through like digital transformation, and you know, transformation has been happening like forever. But you know, I think that companies are trying to figure out how do we operate sort of in this new world. So the role of the product manager, I think that there is like that evolution of what does the product manager have to do? What are the skill sets? And then in general, like how can, it's a great time because, you know, as women, we can come in and sort of learn these skill sets and get ahead of them because everybody's learning, yeah. Right? It's a great time to bring our point of view and sort of the way we approach, you know, bring more of that listening and that empathy and sort of that different type of thinking that is really, I think, critical for this new world of AI and this world of like trying to drive efficiency within our organizations. Not sure if I'm getting to what you're asking, but
you absolutely are. I mean, I think that you touched on so many things there that are really important, and some of them are, I think people kind of feel them intuitively, but it's hard to find the data. For example, when you talk about representation, when you talk to this person and they have pretty good representation in the firm that they're in, I mean, one of the things that we see is that representation very much varies from firm to firm,
yeah.
But that when you look across the profession, what you see is really parity at the entry level right now in terms of based on gender, but mm-hmm. that representation really drops off when you get to mid-career, senior, and executive levels. And so, mm-hmm. you know, those are areas that we're focused on because we want to drive up the representation in those areas to bridge that gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as you and I have talked about quite a bit, like just bridging that gap is not enough, right? Like we want women to step into those roles feeling highly competent. We want them to know what to expect and to help them to navigate those waters so that they can really thrive in those positions, right? And we can't always change the way industry operates, but we can help people be prepared to step into those roles in ways that give them a leg up in terms of managing either their work-life balance or their career expectations or just their general well-being in terms of being able to perform, right?
Absolutely. I think that that's one of the things that is that we can talk about and we should be talking about more, which is a lot of the holistic part of ourselves. Yes, there are skill sets that we need to have. There's a lot of capacity of being driven and having perseverance to be successful at product management. But I think the really important part, it's one of the things that if I were to tell sort of my younger self or, you know, my previous self to, if I had known sooner to, for example, a lot of mindfulness components, like things where I have a lot of self-doubt. It's like, how can I work through being more bold? How can I work through, you know, when I have to juggle lots of different things, how can I feel confident in creating my own boundaries? Because ultimately when I'm my whole self, that's when I'm going to be sort of the best at my job. And I think that a lot of those things that, and you know, this is a big topic I think to drill into if we want, but I think that the parts of us in order to be successful and to have sort of a long career, I think in product management, and to your point, our goal being that, you know, women are able to thrive and sustain and feel happy and proud to be in the field, I think is a lot of what we're trying to work through. Because I will definitely say in my career, and I saw this question like come up, you know, come up in the registrations was like, you know, how did some of these things affect the way that I sort of went through my career? And I made a lot of choices because I had to make choices because it was good for my family or if it was good for myself. And I was able to, and I had to be patient. I sometimes had to wait for the right opportunity that would give me sort of that holistic balance.
Yeah.
Some personal stuff, my husband is a teacher. I have two, right now they're teenage boys. I have elderly parents. And so a very early in my career, I did a lot of traveling. I wasn't home very much because that was the way that my husband as a teacher was said, hey, you do your career. I love it. I'm going to do my career. I love it. So it was a very win-win for us. I think sometimes that's unique, but it works for us. And so I did a lot of traveling. When I was at Yahoo, I was like the only, executive leader out of Los Angeles. So in order to make sure I had a seat at the table and had that face time, because building those relationships and being able to sit there with the rest of the team was really critical. So I did, a turnaround Southwest flight from Burbank to San Jose every week. You know, I was sort of the A-lister with lots of drink tickets and all of that stuff. But at that time, that was important for me because it was important to establish myself in that role and to build those relationships. I also made decisions to leave a startup because I loved what I was doing. I loved being on sort of the cusp of building something brand new and working, really closely with engineering and building out marketplaces. But you know what? I was getting phone calls from school that my kindergartner needed to get picked up. And that was like a 1 hour commute from, the beach to where I live. So I ended up leaving that job after a year. And I was very lucky because I didn't just leave it. Someone had called me based on my past experiences and said, hey, I need someone to run marketplace operations. I know it's not a product role. I know that you left Yahoo because you wanted to take another product role, but come and do this. And I made that choice. And it was actually a little bit uncomfortable because it's not a role that it wasn't a product role. It was a marketplace operations role. It was about network quality. It was about measuring the quality of supply to bring into our network, right? But I took it because it was a new skill and it was great for what I wanted to do. It gave me sort of that balance in my life. So,
it's such a great story because I think what you're really touching on is that what people need changes over the course of their career. And sometimes you take these detours, but sometimes the detours have benefits that may not be apparent when you take them. So my guess is that when you stepped into that role, you gained some other skills and perspective that in the long run benefited you in terms of other opportunities that came along. So, earlier this year when we recorded the podcast Path to CPO, I heard a lot of that from the women who landed in CPO roles, that they actually took a lot of different paths and that they found that those paths were important in terms of them getting, I guess, more empathy across the entire organization and also expanding their skill sets in ways that they hadn't necessarily thought of and weren't necessarily apparent that would benefit them, in the long run, but did pan out that way for them. I think that's an interesting item and something for us to think about. I also think that it kind of circles back to what I was talking about earlier in terms of having a product approach. If we really want to serve the community, we have to be able to serve women at every stage of their career and every stage of that decision-making. In talking to you about sort of your path, I mean, one of the things that really strikes me, and there are so many paths into and through product, right? And when you, it's not like you can say, here's the map, just follow the map, right? And I think that collectively, we create the collective map by sharing our stories. And I think that helps give each of us confidence that we can move forward, right? That we're not off the path, right? The mm-hmm. one approved path, right? So I think it will be really interesting to see how you and your team are able to really tap into that as we build out opportunities and information and tools and all of those things for the members of our community to use, right? So
absolutely. I mean, I think that that's always the, as product people, we always want to iterate and make it better. Like, how can you make it? You could always make it better, right? But how do we make it impactful? I think one of the things I didn't circle back to on the CPO piece and like, how is it different at Women in Product is, you know, there are a lot of things that are different about it because we, you know, first of all, every day, my sort of North Star is the mission. The North Star is not, you know, we didn't make numbers today. How are we going to make that up? Or, you know, hey, we, you know, what do we need? Basically, we look at the mission and that's what I focus on every day. At the same time, we also tap into our community. We have a volunteer community. So if you think about, you know, what you would normally do, you would try to tap into like the resources in your organization. If you don't have enough resources, like what do you prioritize something out? You scope things out, or if you need to bring in, you know, third party because you don't have the skill set. With us, you know, yes, we have our internal teams and, you know, that's what we built, but we also rely on the community. So that's a really, I think, unique and interesting part of this role is to how do we harness that? What are the tools? How we bring it together? Because I think that there's, and we think go back to like value proposition, I think that we have this amazing community. I attended the kickoff for the AI series yesterday, and I was so like energized by it. You know, a lot of the things the speakers were so passionate, not just about like what they do in product, but wanting to help and wanting to share those experiences and be really real about what's hard and what everyone can do. And, or here's how you get comfortable with this. Go try this out. Yes, it feels hard, but go and do it. You know, just that one session, and, you know, we have many of these types of sessions. It's amazing to just see that energy coming from the community. If we can harness that in everyone, it's, you know, this is where I get super excited is like all of that effort, that energy and the desire that, you know, the power of the masses is so powerful. I know that there is a lot of, I feel the excitement and almost the impatience of like, what's next? And, you know, what are we doing next? And we will keep communicating. I'm 30 days in. I just finished the listening tour and, you know, really getting to know the business. And so a lot of this too is there's going to be a lot of ideas and there's going to be, you know, so many things with how are we going to leverage AI internally? And please, I know we're recording and don't quote me because I don't like to commit to things when I've spoken to my team.
I think there were some questions that people posted early on. Michelle asked, what is your vision for WIP? How do you see it changing and staying the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of this is like the how do we do that? How do we get there? Clearly, it's about what are the things that are going to be the most impactful? But then it's like, how do we do that? How do we reach our members and our community? What are those like amazing experiences that make it easy to access and to, you know, leverage the community to help us to iterate and make it better? So when we talk about like, how is it going to be the same? I think the mission is very much the same. It's just what's different is like maybe I would love to infuse some changes in how do we get there. And like I said before, so that we can scale and that we can continue to offer even more. I think the team has done such an amazing job with the size of the organization and I did attend the conference before, you know, all of this had happened, but I attended the conference and I was really impressed by, you know, the leveraging of the platform that enables you to do speed networking. Mm-hmm. And for a virtual conference where I got to meet, I think, I don't know, 15 other women who I'm connected with, I was able to join as a mentor for like Chameleon Academy. Eleni reached out. It was just a really great experience. And to be able to do things like that, like how do we really enhance the experiences and the design with everything we have at our hands. I think that that will hopefully make our community even more sticky and even more impactful.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that I have discovered is, you know, we have a bunch of new things that we've been rolling out. For example, we're rolling out, I think, as we speak, a new program called PM Cooperative, which is small peer coaching groups that will have effectively senior and executive level women from the community who will be moderating and kind of coaching them through this. They tend to be focused in particular areas and delving into helping people tackle problems that they face or think about their future. I think that's a really great new program, and I hope people will consider that. You talked about the AI event yesterday. We have a workshop series coming up on AI. I think there's going to be a lot more of that kind of stuff where people can partake and really trying to offer things all year round that people can join in and, you know, hone their skill set, explore something new, connect with others so that they, you know, have that support in what they're doing. So,
yeah. I think you touched upon one thing that we haven't also talked about is like within the community and the things that, you know, our events and our programs, it also gives the opportunity for the community to exercise their skill sets.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be a speaker or if you want to facilitate a discussion, I think sometimes these are things that we want to hone these skills more. And it's a great way to do it while like sort of growing yourself and then also like pushing forward for the community. So I think that's actually a really great benefit of getting involved as well.
Yeah. So one of the other questions Ellie asked, what are the biggest unknown unknowns you've learned in your journey to chief product officer?
Yeah, that's a good one. So I would say that a lot of the, I guess I would say one of the biggest unknowns was that when I got to be a chief product officer, you know, I was really confident going in terms of my product skill set and generally have been successful at, you know, building relationships and negotiating and things like that. But it was really different because as the steward of the business and really, I think I realized I really had to emphasize things like understanding the financials really well, understanding the different drivers of each of the different executive teams, because you need to work with these folks. And it's about, in a way, it's about empathy. And in the role that I was in, I was driving a lot of transformation. I was in the CPO role, and I think if folks go to sort of, you know, a mid-sized company that is in digital transformation and doing to do a CPO role, you know, the product pieces, but oftentimes you're going to have to drive the product led thinking and get people to understand what it means to be product led. And so there's a discipline and a sort of, you have to know where you need to get support and where you have to drive advocacy for what you're doing, because you're trying to run your teams, you're trying to launch products, but at the same time, you also need to be able to manage across, because you need all of the different parts to be successful, right? I tell my teams this all the time at all levels, like you can build the most amazing like product that's going to meet the needs, but if you're not, you know, coordinated with like your marketing comms to get the word out, if you don't have like your customer support team that's ready to answer the questions when, you know, maybe something falls over, you need to have all of those parts to really make for a successful launch. So I'd say that unknown piece is like really leaning in on the business components. I think probably I'll add one more, like in terms of the soft skill parts, and maybe some people are really good at this. They're naturally good at it. For me, I think that was more of a skill set to learn, but to be really prepared, in meetings to understand people's work styles and people's negotiating styles and people's, you know, understanding how they think and work so that you can either adapt or you can sort of, I don't want to say push your agenda, but get done what you need to get done. And I think I took some of that for granted because I generally don't have problems speaking with people and, you know, getting along with people. But at the same time, when you need to get things done, there is an important skill set in being able to look across the table and say, this person is really, this is what they need to optimize for. And this is how they operate. Let me operate with them so we can have those spirited discussions and get things done.
Yeah. I think you bring up a couple of points that really came up in the podcast series, which is that, A, when you step into a C-level role, you can't just think about product. Actually, your focus has to be on your peers on the C-suite and figuring out how you influence them in terms of being in alignment with whatever the agreement is on products or the future or the goals, et cetera. And the other thing that you really touched on there is this idea that companies are, by their size and structure, but different, right? They have different goals, they have different ways of working, but they can also have different mindsets depending on where they are in that spectrum, right? Like seed level startups, like they're just looking for product market fit and nothing else matters, right? But when you get into a company that is maybe owned through private equity, they may have different goals, right? And so you're trying to infuse that product mindset, but you have to think about how you do that in the light of those goals. And that requires some complexity in how you break those things down.
Yeah, I think that that goal, that vision and goal setting component is really critical because it's always your North Star to check in on if you're actually working on the right things, you know, and you're right. You have to look at your stakeholders and understand like what do those stakeholders need and want. Because for example, if you're trying to drive, you know, a higher valuation, and a higher valuation means that you are a lot more infused with technology, then you need to do that. And how do you measure that? Your measurements might be different from, say, something that is like driving bottom line revenue.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that you really have to understand what those drivers are. And then also, I would say for folks who are working for leaders who have to make those decisions, oftentimes those decisions aren't what you expect them to be, and you disagree with them. But there are a lot of things that, you know, the product leader is really trying to juggle all of the stakeholder commitments, right? As well as your, you know, your customer focus. So juggling stakeholder commitments, customer focus, your employees, like all of that coming together is a lot. And that's why these structures and these like sort of frameworks are, I think, really important, because there's a lot to have to take in. One of the ones that I keep saying, and I get asked this all the time, is how did you get to a nonprofit from for profit, and what did that journey look like? I wasn't looking for this role. If I'm being fully honest, I was looking for another CPO role, maybe something in ad tech or in data, because I really love product management. I love what I do. It's hard, but I love what I do. And I was introduced to Elizabeth through another mutual connection. So I had a chat with Elizabeth, and she invited me to the conference. After the conference, I called Bente back and said, put my name in the hat. The mission and what we're doing here is really, I think I would be amiss to not explore it. Mm-hmm. Now, from there, I think that there was a lot in terms of, again, coming back to like being open and being open to different opportunities and different experiences. I definitely went through some of you, if you heard my talk with Phil Terry on Never Search Alone, that whether you do it through there or your own process, it was just being really introspective of what I wanted to do next, what my strengths are, and sort of, I did put in the, what is going to bring me joy? Like, what is going to bring me joy? And my team of, you know, my personal board and advisors, and this is why I think things like coaching circles are really important, because people who know you, they may not know you that well, they will ask you hard questions. Yeah. They will ask you like, hey, if you had this women in product role, and I was looking at other roles as well, in this role, you know, and you were, it didn't matter, you know, what the nature of it was, which one would you take? Like, if you could just do what you wanted to do. And so this role really checked a lot of the boxes of what I wanted to do. I wanted to scale products. I wanted to build teams. I wanted to be mission driven. You know, I get the added benefit of interacting with this community, and, you know, the goal is to make an impact and help everyone out. So I think it's, I'm in a way, in my mind, I'm still like, I'm open, because I know that this is going to like unlock a lot of things for me. And I'm learning. There's a lot of new stuff that I'm learning. Like, yeah, being here and sort of being open and vulnerable, that's new for me. This is not like, mm-hmm, I'm a bit of the behind the scenes, like execution product strategy person who's, yeah, delivering product. So thank you for being here, guys.
So along those lines, there's other questions up above, but Lacey put in a thing here that she joined today. She is on the job hunt, and she just wanted to know what would be your biggest advice for someone that is out there looking for a job in this market that's challenging.
Yeah. So my advice, and I'm a little bit biased, is I really got a lot out of a community like Never Search Alone. And the reason why, and whether you do it there or you do it in another way, is that it is really lonely and it discouraging to be looking for a role. We are like accomplished women and non-binary folks who have done good jobs in our previous roles, right? But sometimes you start to like question that when you're applying for roles that you seemingly are qualified for and you're getting rejections, or you're not even getting responses back, right? So I think that first of all, having community that can like, that you don't have to do it alone with and you can bounce ideas off of is one. I think the other parts are, again, like there's something about really knowing yourself and being really crisp about what you want, so that you can be intentional about the roles that you're looking for. And then there's all the other things like ensuring that, you know, your resume is on point and you've got your LinkedIn there. But the last one I will say is your network. Like networking, that's another unknown as well, known unknown, Ellie, is, you know, your network is so important and so critical to, you know, how, first of all, in the job hunt, but in general, yeah, in your career, these relationships that you make are going to help you when you have a question about something, or if you need to, if you need support. I will say that in that experience, in that process, part of that process is you have to reach out to, I don't know, like 15 or 30 people in your network. And for some, like for me, it wasn't that hard because I keep my network pretty well. And the Yahoo network is amazing. If anyone on the call is from Yahoo, you know that the network is just really amazing, but like people will help you, yeah, and people will make introductions. Yeah. And, you know, I think that you sometimes think that people won't because they're too busy or they don't remember you, or they don't have enough to say, but generally I would say I got callbacks from everybody, and everybody was like, how can I help? Let me connect you with this person.
It's really, so, you know, what Phil has done with Never Search Alone, I just feel like it's such a great match for us because it's all based on community. And mm-hmm, you, when you have a community like that, you start to build that virtuous cycle, right? Like people are happy to help other people because they've benefited from it. Even if they're somewhat loose connections, even, you know, like just being part of the Facebook group that we have and going in there and asking people questions or for help, or, you know, getting to know other people through that, that the power of that is really kind of astonishing. So, and I think also, especially in this job market, it's incredibly helpful to have people who will, you know, hold you up, like give you support and say,
yep,
I've had friends who've been in this situation, and you know, they'll like send something to me to read, and I'm like, why are you underselling yourself? Like you're acting like you haven't accomplished anything. Like, you know, you've done a ton. And so then I'm able to say to them, like, you've done this and you've done that and you've done that. Like, own it, man. Right. Like, you're good. There's a question in here which I think relates to this topic, which is about sponsorship. You know, how have you found sponsors? You know, people always ask this question. Go ahead and answer.
Yeah.
And then Susan Davis Ali, I might call on you to talk about sponsorship for a second, because Susan, who's I know is on this, has a lot of expertise in this area as well.
I'll be brief. So I would say that maybe my sponsorship in my career, you might say is passive, but at the same time, the reason why I say that is because I went to go work for people who I really respected and I knew I could learn from. Like, that's always part of the decision-making process, is like, who am I going to report to? And so in some cases, I had a lot of advocacy and sponsorship from my leaders. And, you know, that was easy. But later, I would say that sometimes you have to ask. So, you know, and you have to have the courage to sort of say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I think I can learn from you. Would you be a mentor? Would you be a sponsor for me?
Yeah.
And see what they say. I mean, the worst they can say is no, but you know, we have to, in a way, like, advocate for ourselves and ask as well.
And, you know, that was another thing that I heard all the time from the CPOs that we interviewed for the podcast, is that they would constantly raise their hand for things. So Susan, I mentioned you. Do you want to say something about sponsorship?
So anyone who's really, really, really wants to dig into that, I thought it was on my shelf right here, but there's a book by Sylviane Hewlett called Forget a Mentor, Find a Sponsor. And I'm sure there's like brief versions you can look up to kind of read about. But I would say that the formula is exactly what you said. It's, first of all, you have to be a top performer. No one wants to sponsor someone who's not a top performer. So absolutely positively excel at what you do. But then it's visibility, right? As Elizabeth said, like, the biggest myth that women hold is, if I work hard, people will notice and I'll be rewarded. And that just doesn't happen. So you have to be highly visible. So here's my 30-second strategy. On Friday every week, I want you to write a statement that I did X and the impact was Y. And if you can only name one, that's okay. But what did I do for the week? Because you can't just say I answered all my emails. That's really not. Because sometimes it feels like that's all I did all week, right? So I want you to think about writing, I did X and the impact was Y. And think about the things that the why your company cares about. I did something faster. I did something great for a client. Like, what are the things your company cares about? That's the why. You know, I did X and the impact was Y. And then every month you'll have four, and you're going to do a little audit, and you can decide what are those top two or whatever. And then you need to be good about spreading that word around.
Yeah.
Right. Audit yourself. Like, if I were an external consultant, what did I do this month that's valuable? And it's hard to think about that. But if you just every week take 5 minutes and write that, and then share with your manager, be like, hey, here are the four things that I did this month. What do you think was most valuable? Because it's important to understand what your organization values. Because if we do it all heads down, talking in our own head, we make a lot of bad assumptions. So that's how you start to find a sponsor. Let people know the impact you're making. And then people will be like, hey, I want to get to know you better and maybe be your sponsor.
Yes. Yes. That thing about what your company values is so important. It's important to understand that kind of stuff. So I want to circle back around. Ellie, you had a question in here about what does success look like for you? And Susan also asked, I think related, what do you see as your biggest challenge or the rate limited factors in reaching the goals that you want to reach?
Great. Those are really great. And I'll try to do that in 1 minute. So first of all, I think the success piece, I still think that that relates back to moving the needle on more women progressing in their career. So we'll have to work through how we measure that and understand that so that we know that we're driving impact. I would say the other part in terms of like, what are the challenges? I think with any other like product role challenges, like, we have resources, we have time, we have scope. How do we figure out what we're going to do that's going to drive the most impact? and ensure that, you know, we can sustain all of our programs and our events. So I think that the challenge part is actually, I think, the fun part for me, which is how do we really harness what we have and like make more out of it? How can we like really put things together and drive more, better, longer term sponsorships? I think all of those things are part of the puzzle. And so some of these things I have to get up to speed on, you know, being in the nonprofit world and how things operate. So for my own self, I think that there's a lot of learning to do and still a lot of listening. So, you know, very brief, but I would say that in a nutshell, that's what I would say.
I think we're at the end of our time for today. Just zipped by for me. I hope it did for all of you.
Same.
It was great to talk to you, Carmen.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you for listening. And thanks also to our partner, Discover, who provides annual support for the work of Women in Product. And thank you to our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review so that others can discover us. Android users, find us on Spotify. Or share this episode with others who you think would find it interesting.